My next guest is a wizard. A few years ago, he built and grew a Facebook group to more than 80,000 members and made over $1 million by selling products and services in that group. Known as the preeminent Facebook groups expert, he went on to teach business owners how to grow and monetize their audiences on Facebook. And to date, his students have amassed more than 5 million group members and generated tens of millions of dollars in revenue. Still in his 20s, he's also the creator of a software called Group Funnels, which helps business owners easily collect email addresses from Facebook group members. And he's the host of the Attempt at Greatness podcast. He's been a big influence on my life, and I'm really excited for him to get to share his remarkable journey with you today. Please welcome Arnie Gieske. Arnie Gieske is kind of like, I would say like a wizard really, or like a magician kind of on Facebook and really just on the internet. Like, how would you, if you had to kind of like in one word describe yourself, what do you use? What's your title?
Yeah, tough to say one word for sure, but I often, you know, go back to community building, because every brand I've ever built always is, you know, powered by the community and the people with it. So
I guess I want to start here, because most of the guests I've had on the show have more classic online business models where, you know, they have an email list, they have maybe like a lead magnet, or they have a certain content platform like YouTube or something to kind of, you know, grow their audience. But you are unique in the fact that you've always grown your brand through Facebook and Facebook groups. So I'm curious kind of like what led you to that? Like, how did you first discover or realize that Facebook groups was kind of the thing for you?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm very grateful that I kind of got into this whole Facebook groups gold rush before it was cool, in around 2016 or so, because I was still pretty fresh in online business. I was doing some things and I was working with some agencies and things like that. And I was reading an article on Entrepreneur Magazine about communities and how much communities tied in with, you know, long-term brand growth and all this stuff. And I emailed the author and I just said, hey, I just want to say it was an awesome article, really resonated, you know, great article, pretty much. Just giving a simple compliment. I didn't pitch him on anything or, you know, want to get featured or any of that. And he emails me back and says, hey, I really appreciate that. You know, I think it's so important for entrepreneurs to, you know, have a community and also for their brands. Hey, I just opened up a Facebook group for entrepreneurs. If you want to come check it out, you know, let me know. Yeah, sure. Throw me in there. So I joined this group 2015, 2016, something like that, when nobody was really using groups for business. It was very, very fresh. So I joined in, there's like less than 100 people. And I saw this guy's group go from 100 to like 15,000 in like a year. And I saw him growing his brand, doing different stuff, collaborating with members, getting clients, getting all these partnerships. I was like, this guy's onto something. This is pretty cool. So I started seeing some other different groups pop up. And I started seeing, you know, more niche groups and just kind of things going on in the space, and joining some other groups that I really liked, and, you know, ended up making a lot of lifelong connections and clients and all kinds of opportunities coming from these groups. So I was like, I could probably do that. Let's give it a shot. And I launched a couple of different groups. I had four groups that absolutely failed for one reason or another before the fifth one went on to grow to 80,000 members and make me over $1 million. So my real learning was what not to do on those first four. And that really set me up in a lot of ways to better understand, okay, how do groups work? How do they interact with the community, with the business, with the marketing, with the, you know, the whole machine? And it took me a little while to figure out, you know, where I went wrong on some of those other ones and just kind of systematically fix all the stupid stuff I was doing and make it work.
Mm-hmm. Who was the guy with the original group, like your original inspiration?
Yeah, his name was Andrew Metal. He's the guy that got me into that first entrepreneur Facebook group. I learned a bunch there just seeing him do it.
Okay. And this was like 2015, 2016. So what were you doing like at the time? What was kind of your, you said like agency work and client. So you were already an internet marketer, but just you hadn't thought of Facebook groups. Yeah. It's funny, man, because like I think of Facebook groups and at the time that I, and you were kind of the first person for me that I saw having so much success with a Facebook group. But like, I remember in school, like back in the day, having like a Facebook group was something you did for school. Like we had, I had a chemistry teacher and her name was Mrs. Lummis, and they created this Facebook group called Lumistry because it was like a play on words for her name or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you'd go in there, you'd like ask questions, you'd get, people would try to like cheat on the test and get answers and stuff like that. But it wasn't like, it wasn't something you enjoyed. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a group. I had never thought of like building a group for just connecting with people you don't already know. Was it kind of like when you saw that, what made you feel like you were kind of naturally drawn to that? Like, was there something about it, just the size of it, or was it more like the, you know, the dynamics of how it worked?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of kind of light bulb moments along the way. Number one was, especially when you have a more niche community, you can come in as, you know, a consumer and say, hey, I'm looking for blank, or somebody who does this, or I came up against this random problem that people outside of that niche aren't going to be able to know or help you with. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, groups are kind of like forums, but Facebook has all the attention, all the users. Forums died off a lot. A lot of those attentions that were on forums are now on Facebook groups. It's the same idea. Threads, topics, discussions, going back and forth, helping each other out, arguing with each other, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I started seeing that and I was like, wow, that's really cool. You know, Facebook is capturing more of the market share of forums and less people are going to other websites because they're already on Facebook. So that caught my attention. And then my very first sale in online business came through a group where somebody said, hey, I want to get a mobile app developed. Does anybody know somebody? I said, yeah, I got a partner that makes mobile apps. I wasn't making them myself, but I worked with some of these other agencies. So I reached out to the guy, chatted with him, got him set up with this agency partner. And the guy bought like a $15,000 mobile app. And I was like, holy shit, this just came from a Facebook post. Like, there's something here, you know? And, you know, I made some commission on that and they made their money and they're happy with their app and all that. So it was like, let's do more of this. How do we make this happen again? You know?
Was this in your group or someone, like just a group you were in when you made that?
Yeah, that was in another group.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's the thing is when I kind of fell into this world in 2018, just kind of getting into internet business for the first time, I was introduced to this idea by a mentor, Mike Becker, my like copywriting mentor, who just gave us this list of Facebook groups and was like, go join these and make business connections in there. And I was like that was just a new concept for me that you could even do that. I found your group. Yours was actually one of the first that I ever, started poking around in. It was huge. Like it was over 70,000 members and it was called Millennial Entrepreneurs. How did you come up with that idea, Millennial Entrepreneurs? And I know you said you had like a bunch of failed groups before that, but walk me through that process a little. Like how did that come about?
Yeah. So it started off as a podcast first. Okay. And started a podcast, started interviewing some people with the same idea of, hey, I want to get more connected while building an audience, while providing value. So I would just interview cool people that had awesome stuff going on. Hey, come tell your story on my show. I got, all these listeners, they'll love you. Let's connect. And I was just rolling out episodes and episodes. And I thought, well, I had those other failed groups, but now I got a little bit more steam behind me here with this podcast audience, even though I had just launched the podcast like 3 or 4 months before the group dropped. Let's make a group. And I hosted like a 7-day challenge. It was like a specific set of interviews to help with different areas of business, brought on some more guests, everybody promoted it, all this stuff. And I got like 150 members the first week. So I'm pumped. I got all these people engaged going through this challenge and everything. And I made an offer at the end, completely bombed. One person bought it and then asked for a refund the next day. And I was like, shit, where do we go from here? Then it was kind of quiet because the challenge ended. Nobody wanted to buy my thing. I just didn't have alignment there. So I got started basically just polling the audience. Hey, what do you guys want to do with this group? where do you guys want to go from here? What's going to be helpful for you? And then, you know, throw out some ideas for different names, you know, just kind of talk to them, better connected with the members, the ones who are active from the challenge. You know, they were hyped, they were there, they wanted to grow, they wanted help. I just, that offer I sent out just didn't fit for them, but they want help. So I had to readjust.
What was the challenge that you're referring to?
It was just 7-day entrepreneur challenge, just like some random interviews, you know, covering a few different areas of business. And I forget exactly what the offer was. It was some kind of an agency offer, something about like build you a landing page and do this and do that. I don't know. Okay. It sucked.
So did they sort of help frame this idea of like the millennial entrepreneur for you? Like that?
Kind of. The podcast was already out with that name, but they helped like vote and validate that name for the group. Okay. Yeah.
It's a cool concept because it's like, it's definitely a broad brush, but it kind of hits the mark. Like you might think of it, or somebody might think of it and be like, oh, that's kind of an obvious, like, I guess, audience, but it kind of goes against a lot of the, I guess, traditional like advice that people get out there where it's like, you have to be super niche, you know, like when you're first getting started, it's like, be really niche, pick like as specific as you can. Like when I was first getting started in email marketing, there was a guy who was doing, who was also like getting started, and he picked his niche, and it was like, I do email marketing for pizza restaurants in Western New York. And I was like, that's like, you know, that's super specific, but this is kind of like you're hitting all these different people that are kind of all just in line with this idea of the millennial entrepreneur. Cause there's people in there, they're not even millennials or they're not necessarily entrepreneurs, but it still gets them. How did you even know that you wanted to do that as like a podcast?
Because I saw that concept of connecting with different people and adding value happening even in just the other Facebook groups, I was like, I think this would be an even cooler format on podcast. So let's get to the bottom of people's stories, you know, share that with the audience, make some connections for me, and, you know, just kind of went from there.
Okay. What was kind of your goal when you were going into it, making it? Did you want to grow like a huge group, or were you just kind of like, I'm just trying to get like some business right now? Like, did you have sort of a goal behind it?
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, I was definitely having fun with, you know, the audience and great feedback from the guests and the speakers and everything. So I was like, okay, I know if I can, you know, add value first here, it's going to come back to me, which it did. And, you know, that's one of our core values is give value first. So that was always like the hashtag in the group, and you know, plenty of people showing up and saying that. And, you know, cause I wasn't selling stuff that was specifically related to most of the members at the time, but when they needed certain things, I was able to help out or connect them to somebody who could, and, you know, worked out. I was, you know, making a good full-time living doing that.
Did you have any idea of like how big it was going to get?
No, I think that was the crazy part. Cause there was, you know, it was like mostly flat for a while. It took me like 6 months to get to 1,000 members. Okay. And then it doubled in the next month, and it doubled again the next month. And before we knew it, it was, you know, 10, 25, 50, 80K members. And then the growth down from there. So it's been a wild ride for sure.
When was kind of like the peak? Like, do you remember a time period maybe where it was just like at its peak, like of the group?
That's tough to say. I think 2018 was a really big one because I was traveling like a freaking madman. I literally went to 20 different countries in 2018, and almost every single country I would host a meetup and post up in the group and say, hey, who's in London? We're going to go out for, you know, dinner this Friday. Come eat at this bar, you know, and just, I would have people all over the place and say, hey, you know, come back. We're going to do another one, or we're going to do another one without you. Like, cool, go for it. Like, that's what community is all about. Okay. So there was a whole lot of the in-person stuff happening and just a lot booming. And I was also a lot more clear on, by that point, I was more focused on helping people with their groups because I had already got mine, you know, booming so much. That business grew a lot. We dropped the software, you know, just a lot of emotion there, especially, you know, going all over the world, hanging out with all the members. That was extra fun.
I remember definitely 2018 was when I joined. I think it was in the summer, and it was like 100 posts a day or something like crazy like that. Like just people posting, and it was so much engagement, comments on the post. And again, like I had never seen anything like this. I had used Facebook groups for college and things like that. So it was like, what the heck is this? And then, yeah, I remember being a little intimidated almost like, how do you even, you know, begin to start? And I went through your, you know, I went through the course that was in there and kind of read through like what you're supposed to do. So I think I made my first post in your group was about like the problem agitate solution formula for copywriters or whatever, but it was like some long form post. And then I don't think I did that again after that, but is that something like, did you ever, notice kind of how, or you kind of knew this was going on, maybe how like there were a lot of people sort of being taught to like go prospect in groups, you know, go like find clients and stuff like that. And, you know, do value posts and try to build your own following. Was that something that you kind of, you came from that sort of world? So you knew that was going on, or did that surprise you that people were doing that? What's kind of your opinion on it?
Like I taught the people that taught that.
Okay. All right. So you were down with it.
I'm down with it, but there's a fine line with everything. And as the market gets more sophisticated, as marketers ruin everything, you know, we got to be smarter about it, about how we do it and, you know, legit add value, not just a value add position. My brand post generates your leads off somebody else's group post. Cause we see that and we know what it is. You know, there's a difference. There's a different feeling. It's a different style of post. There's no like, hey, DM me if you want this checklist after, you know, those kind of things. So fine line, definitely. You know, we just removed those posts. We've had, you know, literally, I think we had like 24 moderators at one point, all volunteer just to help clean up the group. And, you know, since then I would turn on post approval because just so much crap gets through on the bigger groups. Now anything gets posted has to get approved. So that's a part of how we keep it cleaner. It definitely lower the engagement because if people have to wait to get their post approved, they're less likely to post there in the future. So it kind of sucks for people who are doing, you know, good posts, normal stuff, but it keeps all the spam out.
Was there ever like a moment for you where you sort of realized that shift was happening in the group? Because it's like, because you had failed several groups before, or maybe not failed, but they just were nowhere near as big. Now you have this millennial entrepreneur thing. You said it starts doubling in size every month. Was there like a moment where you kind of realized, okay, like there's something here. This is going to be big.
It actually came pretty early on in that kind of doubling sequence when it went from the 1 to 2K to, you know, the 5 within the span of 2 months. Part of what helped in some of that growth was we got featured in a big publication. I think it was on Fast Company. Okay. Alongside some other groups. But I saw that, you know, all those groups that got featured got a spike in traffic because, you know, big popular publication. So everybody got, you know, let's say a few hundred more members. And I remember seeing the difference in the communities after that because I was keeping an eye on it. Like, oh, these guys got featured too. They just got some new members. And then just kind of seeing how they handled it, what went on in the community, you know, what the leadership did, what the members did, all that. And a lot of people got a little spike and then just kind of kept going at a regular pace. And then we got a little spike and then it just, pew, just popped up. So like Facebook's cool like that because Facebook is designed to keep people engaged in what they want to see and spend more time on the platform so they can sell more ads, increase their company valuation. That's what they're all about. So if you understand Facebook's goal of having people hooked on the platform, you got to think as a creator, what can I do with my community to keep them hooked and also have other people in my community want to post, engage, share, help each other, and keep everybody addicted to Facebook, especially your group? Because the more engaged it is, the more Facebook's going to suggest more members to you. Like a lot of people think, you know, I spent, you know, $1 million on Facebook ads or whatever to get all these people in the group. Nope. Facebook sent me vast majority of those members. I did some paid ads, some other stuff, and they ended up in the group. Okay. But the majority of that was all organic, Facebook sending me new members. So it's pretty cool when you can tap into it like that.
For sure. Did you ever feel like when it was growing, did you start to feel like it ever got too big, or like, did it ever get kind of out of control? And you said you had like 12 volunteer mods come in and everything. Like, was there kind of like a point where it changed where you were like, all right, I got to get control of this thing? Or was it just more like a gradual process?
Definitely. There's some different points, like especially as a group owner, we all had times where we're like, man, screw this group. I'm going to shut it down. You guys are annoying. You guys are bitching each other in the comments. I don't want to deal with it. You know, I got bigger stuff to do. And then the next week you're like, man, I really love these guys though. This is a good group, the good ones, you know? So every group owner's had that battle, because a group is very much more alive than something like an email list or a YouTube channel or whatever it is, because there's so much engagement happening, conversation. Yeah. So when everybody's loud and annoying, it's extra loud and annoying. When everybody's great and productive and helpful, you know, you're really proud of it. So I put the whole group on timeout one time. I said, okay, Everybody's muted for 72 hours. Y'all need to calm down. We're cleaning up all this junk. Here's the rules. Stick to them or you will get kicked out. No warnings. So go back to unmute and everybody's like, okay, cool. Arnie's not messing around. All right, let's get back to business.
Yeah, you had to come in and put the hammer down. What were they doing? Like, was it just like a lot of arguing, or was it just people spamming the group? What was going on?
Pretty much all that. Like, okay, Either direct spamming, arguing, you know, being mean to the other members, just making it just not a space that people would want to spend time in.
Okay.
Because if you go in a group and they're just always arguing and not helpful to each other, why would you want to go back? You know?
Right. Yeah, it's funny because like you were saying, like with an email list, you can have engagement, but it's one to the group. And same thing, like, okay, a YouTube channel, you can have all these subscribers and everything, but they can't interact with each other. I mean, they can post comments, but this is totally different. Like, you can go in, you can see who these people are, you can make friends. What's sort of the weirdest thing that you've ever noticed going on? Because you got a group that big, you've got so many different personalities in there. You think anyone ever, like, I don't know, like found love in your Facebook group, or was there ever anyone like doing some shady stuff, maybe like selling kidneys or anything like that?
Well, no kidneys that I know of. Okay. Plenty of random scammers, you know, coming in and DMing everybody. And then somebody DMs me and says, hey, this guy's DMing me all this crap. And then I kick him out, you know? So that's pretty normal. I don't think it was in my group, but I know another guy that did meet his wife on a Facebook group. So they got connected there. Eventually got married and had a kid and all that. So definitely happens.
Okay. What's like the worst thing you can remember, like that somebody did, that you like the worst thing you ever had to kick someone out for?
I remember one time this guy pissed me off. So he came in and he bought my program, and this is self-study course, isn't coaching or anything like that. I expected the world of me, wanted a one-on-one private mentor, wanted, you know, massive results in no time, and wanted us to do it for him and all this stuff. And then asked for a refund. And at the time, our refund policy was, we will give you a refund, but you have to try and use the stuff. If you don't show that you're actually trying to use the stuff, we're not going to give you a refund. So of course, he's not going to be happy about that. And then so he comes in my group and is coming out of left field saying how terrible of a person I am, all these random personal insults out of nowhere. The post was up for a while, cause like I didn't see it for a couple hours. The moderators didn't see it. And I get up there and I have, you know, over 20 of my clients all backing me up, like helping out, say, hey, no, it's not like that. You know, give it a shot, try this, blah, blah, blah. You got to follow through. And this guy just rampaging through and making fun of everybody. It was a big mess.
That was going on for a little while. That's the thing. You've got all these personalities. You don't know what someone's on, right? Like, you don't know what's going on in their life or whatever, but you got to kind of have a way to police it. And I guess that's kind of the thing too. Like, you want to have this open forum for people to just kind of be free to express themselves, but you also got to, you know, you got to keep it under control. You kind of have to police it. So that's the other part too, kind of what you were saying with this story, because there's two sides of it. There's the side that we all see, right, in the group and kind of the community aspect, but then there's the other side, like the business side of things, and sort of the behind the scenes. So I feel like that's kind of interesting too. Like, you had come from a background where you were already doing, you know, agency services and things like that, and you had clients. Were you a copywriter?
Yeah, so that's a big spot where I was able to kind of match the community building with the direct response marketing. And that's what helped me and my clients a lot in terms of how to monetize the group. Because there was a lot of people who could build community, didn't know how to monetize, or knew how to monetize, but didn't know how to build a community in the audience. Mm-hmm. So by kind of combining both of those systems together, that's kind of what gave me my secret weapon there. And also, in, yeah. you know, went out a lot of clients over the years.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I was always wondering if you sort of came from that place first, and then the group was kind of the thing that you discovered to build the audience, and you already kind of had this system in place for yourself, at least like how you were going to monetize it and everything, or if it kind of happened the other way where it was like you got this group and then you had to sort of figure it out, like how am I gonna is it more the first or the second one?
It kind of came more of the group and the audience first.
And
in doing that, I was like, okay, how do I monetize this better? What can I do to better brand it myself, get the right engagement, the right types of, you know, lead generation posts, and, you know, not have the group too spammy, but still, you know, help grow my business. At that time, that's when I started getting a lot more into investing into different coaching programs, courses, stuff like that. So like Dan Henry was one of my earlier mentors. I saw him go from like his first 10 students in his Facebook ads course with me as one of them, to like, you know, thousands of high ticket clients in a couple of years in this big business. And basically I learned a ton of direct response from him. He's a great marketer. Right. And that helped me kind of hone in on, okay, now that I've built up the skill of Facebook groups, how do I package this up into a product program and get that out to people? So I actually learned more by watching him do stuff than what he was actually teaching me.
Okay. That's interesting. What was kind of like your biggest success, would you say, with the group in the business sense? Like, did you have like some offer that just crushed it, like that you can remember?
Yeah. So the main offer that really got me started, because like with the agency stuff, especially if I was doing, you know, either helping some of my agency partners sell some stuff, or, you know, do a little bit of copywriting, a little bit of funnels, you know, I made good money, but it wasn't like, holy crap, I'm rich. You know, mm-hmm. I was getting by. Okay. And the following that though, when I got more into the Facebook groups training, that's when I put together that program on the growth and the engagement, kind of how to put all that in one spot. And that's when it really started blowing up. Because at that time, it was early 2017, and there wasn't much Facebook group education out there. So right. I was the earlier adopters. Everybody didn't know how to do it, wanted to learn how to do it. It's kind of like right now how TikTok is all sexy, or how, you know, 2019, everybody wanted to learn a chatbot. 2017, everybody wanted to learn Facebook groups. So yeah. I was able to really ride that trend up and build both the course business, and later on launch software. They're, you know, both still going today.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you this for my listeners who maybe are trying to fit the pieces together. If you have this big Facebook group and you've got like 80,000 people in there and you've got these offers, but your audience is all on Facebook, why would you need an email list?
Yeah. So especially over the last couple of years, reach of Facebook groups has gone down. Like when we got started, like business pages reach had gone down a little bit since when they became more popular. Even back in 2010, people were like, oh, online marketing, I'll just start a Facebook page and you get mm-hmm. really good reach. And then it went down, down, down because more people started pages. So we're in that same cycle right now, where now because pages sucked, everybody needed groups. Now that everybody has groups, the group reach went down, right? So if you're reaching less than 20% of your people anytime you post, you could be reaching the other 80. And mm-hmm. even if your email list is another 20% open, cool. Now you got, you know, up to 40% reach. Now add in, you know, a text list, or, you know, retargeting ads, or you have a podcast for other people, like audio or YouTube for video, whatever it is. You want to get as close to as possible of 100% reaching your audience with your message. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of how my monetization methods helped people. Is maybe they were doing one bucket, but nothing in the other. You know, they had the group, but they didn't have the email. Or they had the email, they didn't have the group. All right, mm-hmm. cool. Let's do both. If you just doubled your reach, you just doubled your sales. Mm-hmm. People don't get that. You know, when you put those two things together, it just blows things up. So if you have a good campaign, you wanted to get that in front of as many people as possible, stack up those channels and it will absolutely double, triple your results.
Did you kind of have the email list from the beginning? Like, was that something you knew you needed to kind of start right when the group started?
Yeah, I don't think right at the beginning, but there also wasn't the ability to ask people for emails when they joined back then.
Right.
So when that ability came out, that's when I started doing more of that. And that's when a client of mine was like, hey, you should make a software that collects those emails.
Right.
And I was like, nah, that sounds like a lot of work. I don't know anything about software. So I just kind of wrote it off. And then a month later, he hits me up and says, hey, I made a beta version of a software that collects the emails when people join your group. Mm-hmm. And he pretty much said, I'm going to do it with or without you. Do you want to partner up? And I was like, all right, that's a good offer. Let's do it. You know, I see this working. So that's how our company Group Funnels was born. Okay. And same idea with kind of making the product market fit. I just put a little teaser out to my client group. I had about 300, 400 people in my course at that point. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey guys, I'm working on this new software. It does this. Are you guys interested? So, you know, let me know if you're curious. We can get you set up with a beta seat. And we sold 100 beta seats in like 72 hours paid, mm-hmm. Not free testers. And I was like, okay, cool. This thing has some legs, you know, let's keep growing with this. Let's make it a better product, make it a real company. And, you know, been able to expand out to, you know, over 3,000 clients in the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right. You actually developed a software that what it does is when people have Facebook groups, it will, it's like an opt-in, right? Like it collects the email addresses from the people in the group and it automatically adds them to your email list, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay,
so
big
game changer because that just didn't exist at that point.
Right. And that's called Group Funnels.
Yep.
You had created this demand already because you were teaching Facebook groups. You had built this hugely successful group of 80,000 mm-hmm. people. Now you're coaching other people and teaching them. You had a course where they could learn how to build and grow a Facebook group like that. And then you sort of created the demand. Did you say that the guy who came up with the idea for Group Funnels was in that, like in your program, right? Learning.
Okay. Yeah, he was a client of mine and he got like, you know, 1,000 members in his first month and then another 1,000 in the second month. And he's like, this is a pain in the ass and I'm going to have to pay my VA a bunch of money. So I just thought I would just make a software to do it. And I was like, that's great. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's cool. Like in, you know, the world of digital marketing in general, but like, especially with what you do with groups, how sort of you just naturally get connected with the right people. Like people will find you because they're in your community. And that's pretty cool how that, you know, how that happens. Just because I want to make sure we get this context. How did you sort of go from that? Like, you know, I have this huge Facebook group. At what point did you start teaching it to people?
So I think it was right around when I had about 5,000 members. I put out a post and I still use and teach this framework daily. Literally, guys, anybody listening, if you want more leads today, by the time this interview is over, press pause, go post this, come listen to it, and then go check your post and you're going to have dozens of leads, right? So basically, I just had kind of a top of the mind thought because like a lot of people were asking me like, Arnie, how did you grow so quickly? This was like right after it doubled twice, you know, 1,000 to 5,000, it started booming. Arnie, how'd you do that? You're doing something different. I don't know what it is. What's the secret, you know? So I just put out a post that, hey, if I put out a free training on how I grew my group to over 5,000 members, would you want to check it out? And the post got like over 200 comments. And I was like, how'd that happen? Like, I thought it was going to be like, you know, a few people like, oh yeah, I'll take a look. And the demand was just massive.
Yeah.
So that was right. That validated the idea for the program, basically.
Okay.
I wasn't selling anything Facebook groups related before that. And then ended up launching that free guide and then doing a small upsell for like just a couple of basic lessons. And then here's the next long game money-making strategy for you guys. I launched at a very low price, number one. Small product, few lessons, few things they could do. The growth side was free. I taught them that. A to Z, gave them everything they need. But once they get people in the group, they need to learn engagement, monetization, management, backend marketing, all this other stuff. So that's how I was able to take the initial program of literally $37, like for a couple lessons, mm-hmm. and expand it to, okay, now it's $97 and I just add some more lessons. Mm-hmm. Okay, now it's $297 and I just added this whole new component on monetization. All right, now it's, you know, $397, now it's $497, and now I just added live coaching calls and just kind of systematically built out that offer from, you know, literally a few dollars. I made like a couple grand on that first launch, but I got my first couple hundred customers. And from there was able to say, hey, what do you guys want next? I want to learn how to monetize better. I want to learn how to, you know, manage the community. I want to learn how to do this. I want to learn copy. So I was like, okay, I know how to do that. Let me record some stuff. And it just kept building out the product, building out the testimonials, and increasing the value offered. And every single price increase had a big launch campaign around it. Hey guys, you've already seen the results from everybody who got in at $97. Price is going up to $297 next Friday. So if you want it for $100, I'm about to triple it. You getting in, you hopping on this train or what? And then, you know, a whole bunch more people come in. And then the next time, all right, guys, you've seen I've had this for sale at $297 for, you know, last 2 months or whatever it is. You've seen all the success stories. This guy just made $20,000. This guy just grew by 5,000 members. This guy just did that, blah, blah, blah. Going up to $500, you joining the fun or what? Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of people come join in again. So that's kind of how I figured out more of my launch processes, product development, community building, program mm-hmm. construction, all this kind of stuff. So that just gave me a major crash course and all that.
Okay. Yeah. You've always been really good with product launches for sure. And just putting stuff out to the market. Was that when you were doing that, what you just described, was that you trying a bunch of stuff and figuring out as you go, or did you already know how to do this? Like, were you, cause it just sounds like, I mean, it sounds really smart and it also sounds kind of hard. Like how did you do it, man? Like,
yeah. So I think especially when you're starting out at a lower price, there's a whole lot less resistance from mm-hmm. people, you know, because like, oh, it's $100. What's the worst that can happen? I'm going to lose $100. So you get a lot more people in. And then every iteration, I just had to figure out different ways to do it of like, okay, we were doing this before. All right. You know, now I see people talk about chatbots. Let's add in a chatbot. Okay. You know, now we got some more money. We can invest in building a team. All right. Let's run some Facebook ads, figure out some ads. So just kind of layering in these different things as it went. And then the processes got, you know, more advanced and higher conversions and just more layers to the campaigns. And then when I had run, you know, dozens of those for myself, I had this whole freaking machine of a launch campaign that I went on to go teach other people and work with clients on rolling out for themselves too.
Right. So you were kind of experimenting with a lot of this stuff and figuring it out as you went along. Have you always kind of been able to do that? Like, and this would have been like what, like five, 6 years ago now, right? Mm-hmm. So how old are you, Arnie?
I'm 29.
You're 29 right now. So this was, you were in your early 20s figuring this out. Mm-hmm. Have you always been like really entrepreneurial? Is that kind of like in your, like since you were a kid, like did you ever do any like entrepreneurial stuff as a kid?
Yeah. A bunch of entrepreneurial stuff. One of my favorite businesses actually has a lot of cool stories attached to it was when I was 18, I was in college, I was learning, you know, some business, some marketing. But my side hustle was driving a pedicab, you know, those big three-wheeled bicycles where you can take a passenger around.
Okay.
I did that out in Seattle. So I would be working at the Mariners games and the Seahawks games and, you know, riding tourists around the piers and stuff like that. And so I would have to go and rent one of those bikes from the company that rents the bikes. And I go out, I charge what I want, I set my hours and just make as much as I can. So I would, you know, get 50 no's to a yes and have to be out there on the street. Hey, where are you going? Hey, you want to ride? Hey, I see you got big, tall heels. You don't want to walk on those bricks, hop in the back, you know, just all this random stuff, just figuring out what works and making hundreds of dollars cash as an 18-year-old every day. And I was pumped. You know, I felt like a millionaire. Okay.
All right. So 10, 11 years ago. You were doing that in the streets of Seattle, man. Wasn't there like big like protests and things going on at that time? Were you ever like driving people around that stuff?
Not much. I have ridden in like parades, and there's like all kinds of stuff that goes on in Seattle and the downtown. Luckily, haven't got caught any protests yet.
Okay. Were you, is that where you grew up, Seattle? Or was it, okay.
Yep.
Cool. What was that like?
I like it, but it's not somewhere I want to live the full year. You know, it's really, really beautiful in the summer, perfect weather, you know, 70, 75 degrees. And winter's just freezing and cold and rainy. So I like to go other places, like travel around a ton.
For sure. You were in school, you said, for business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did you kind of know what you wanted to do? Like, were you always planning on being an entrepreneur and kind of doing your own thing? Or were you thinking something else?
Yeah, I definitely was. And like, I remember a conversation I had with my dad one time, because I think I was either about to go to college or in college and like kind of, you know, half screwing around. And I remember him asking me, like, you know, what do you want to do? What kind of career do you want to have? You know, do you want to be a this? Do you want to be a that? My mom was saying, hey, you know, this person's kid just said they got a job as an elevator tech and they're making $35 an hour. What do you think? I'm like, I don't want to be an elevator tech. You know, I don't care about $35 an hour. And even remember seeing that as a kid, like, I remember I walked by like some construction site or something like that. And you see, you know, 50 people standing there slaving away all day for 10, 12 hours. And I was like, somebody is in charge of this whole thing. Somebody figured out how to do the deal, put the stuff together, but they're not laying bricks. Mm-hmm. No, I want to be like that guy. I don't want to have to lay bricks. So it always kind of got in my mind of like, how do I be the person in charge? You know?
Okay. So yeah, you had that drive growing up as a kid. Mm-hmm. Where do you think that comes from? Like, were your parents entrepreneurs, or were they more just like normal employees, or what did they do, or family members?
Yeah. So they're 50-50. So my mom was a school teacher, grade school teacher, loved it. My dad worked in a museum and as a photographer for his whole career, but they both also had a real estate business. So they're doing commercial real estate, you know, had a couple of properties. So they knew, you know, how to work with teams, how to think like an entrepreneur, how to invest, you know, mm-hmm. all these different things while still having their full-time careers. So it was a good mix of both.
Okay. Did you start doing like the internet stuff while you were in college?
Yep. Like mostly shortly after. Because I got into insurance, actually. So I started selling some insurance after college, because I thought, all right, you know, I had my fun riding my giant tricycle, but I got to get a big boy job now. So I got into the insurance world because I was like, oh, cool. Well, you know, recurring commission sounds good. You know, you eat what you kill, you go out and you make some stuff happen, you get some deals done. Mm-hmm. All right, let's give that a shot. So I did that for a while. And then I was learning a ton. So my very first online business thing was I made a blog sharing about some of the things I learned about sales and insurance and all this different stuff. I'm sure most of my traffic was bots and I never made a dollar from anything, mm-hmm. but I learned how to set up a website. I learned how to set up an email list. And yeah, that was way back. So all those skills I use to this day. You know, I'm still building funnels and sending emails and all kinds of stuff.
Okay. What did your parents think about like when you actually ended up with your business, that like the main one, or just like your internet marketing business? Like, were they supportive, or not even just supportive, but like, did they understand what you were doing? Did they have any kind of like, well, wait a second, why aren't you doing, you know, a real business or something like that?
Yeah. Especially because it's harder to see when it's online. Like if I was, oh, you know, I have a shop, I have a truck, I have this. Oh, okay. He's doing a business, you know? So it took them a while to understand it, especially because, you know, it took me pretty much a full year to get it truly more off the ground. Right. So they did see me glued to a laptop, banging on some keys, trying to make some stuff happen and being frustrated while I'm reading books, taking courses, working with mentors, trying to get clients, do all this stuff. And it just doesn't seem that fruitful yet. And mm-hmm. then I remember later on, I got featured in a big publication about my work. Okay. And I was like, hey guys, check this out. They're like, that's you? What did you get featured for? And I explained them more like, oh, you know, I got this thing going on, blah, blah, blah. Here's what we're up to. And they kind of got it like, oh, he's actually getting outside recognition. You know, it's different if it's online versus in person. So if they, they saw, oh, there's a whole community of people out there that are actually, you know, wanting to work with him and he's doing cool stuff. So took a minute, but
Yeah. No, I'm always interested in kind of like the familial and even like with like friends and stuff. Cause I know I've had friends, you know, from back home and stuff that don't quite like understand what I do and things like that. For you, is there, cause you did struggle with it at first, right? Like everybody kind of goes through that period where they're trying to get it off the ground. Was there like a point for you where it really changed from like that sort of struggle to, you know, okay, this is successful now. And like, I can be financially independent and like have a real income and all that.
Yeah. I think the big part for me was, actually right before I got into, you know, training people in their groups, I started getting a little bit more success with the agency stuff, dialed in some processes, pricing, all that was, you know, doing a lot better. So I had this major, major deal on the table. It was like a $200,000 mobile app. And I would have gotten like a 40 grand check off that big commission for helping get that deal across. But unfortunately, I basically got cut out of the deal by the development partner that would have paid me that and didn't happen. So I thought that was my big break. All right, I'm going to go travel. I'm going to do this. I'm going to Spain, all this stuff. And I had put all this energy into that deal. I wasn't paying attention to any of the other ones. So I was like, that's the big whale. I'm going all in. So that one fell through and that was going to be my ticket to all the travel. So that just slapped me down. I, you know, got screwed over there, but a couple months later, I kind of, you know, rebuilt it back up and got some more deals, got some more clients. And I was like, I think I'm good to go. I think I got enough, you know, money and processes behind me and, you know, confidence in myself. I can go travel. I can take the show on the road. So at that point, I literally bought a one-way ticket to Medellin, Colombia, booked 2 months at an Airbnb. By all that was said and done, I literally had $800 left in my bank account. And I was like, all right, this is going to work or it's not going to work. Let's see what happens, you know?
Okay.
So that was when, right around that time, that was, I think, first quarter 2017, I was like pedal to the metal of figuring all this out. And then that's when I also came up with more of the Facebook group training, which very quickly brought me to, you know, 10, 20, 30K plus months and made over a quarter mil that year with just that program.
Okay. That's so interesting because we actually just had last week, Dennis DeMori on the show. And he told like a very similar story to having like this burn the boats moment where he bought a one-way ticket to Mexico and was like, either it's going to work or it's not. And it worked. Why do you think that is, man? Like, what is it about that? Is it like, well, actually first, what made you want to do it? Like what made you want to just buy a ticket to Colombia and go travel?
Before that, like when that other big deal was happening, I always had the vision of mine, like, I want to go to Spain. I want to go, you know, be able to work online, go hang out in Spain. I had been there before and I loved it. And I was like, I want to spend some more time here. So if I can really get this thing going, I can more comfortably, you know, spend on travel and, you know, have more flexibility and freedom, you know, have that disposable income to do whatever I want, go wherever I want. And as for Colombia, I had a friend that was down there. He said, hey, you got to check this out. And it's, you know, relatively cheap. You know, you're probably going to spend less than half whatever you spend somewhere else. So I was like, okay, you know, a little bit more runway, more ability to invest in, you know, myself, my team, coaches, courses, whatever it is. So it just became a great option.
Okay. Yeah, it's cool. And you're doing that. You said you've been to, you did 20 countries at one point in a year, right? How many countries have you been to now?
I'd say a little over 25. I think it was 25 when I counted, something like that.
Okay. And you're still doing it, right? You're in Mexico right now.
Yep.
Where in Mexico are you?
I'm in Playa del Carmen.
Okay. This is always something like with, you know, online entrepreneurship that I feel like is you know, something that a lot of people don't know about, just the digital nomad stuff and kind of the travel. And it always kind of fascinates me. I pulled up, I stalked your Facebook a little bit to get some pictures of the traveling, but like you've been like this, I pulled up a picture of him here for the listeners from, it says 2018, and he's in Sydney, Australia, but it says in the caption, his road trip got canceled last minute, lost my driver's license somewhere in Brisbane or Asia. So you were traveling and lost your driver's license?
Yep. I always think back to that. And I think, you know, everything happens for a reason. Number one, never know what, but I think that action of losing my license could have saved my life, because driving on the left side of the road, I almost crashed just driving a friend's car, like down the street in Australia. So I always think back to it and go, maybe something else was worse for me.
Oh
in
my
store
God.
I did that, you know?
Oh, wow.
So dodged a bullet there, I guess.
I mean, that brings up a good point with the travel, because how do you do it? Like, do you ever get scared? I guess now you're probably seasoned to it, but when you just went out and just bought a one-way ticket and then started going all over the place, like you were what, like 25 when you did that?
No, I was like, I think 21, 22.
21 or 22.
So I think the biggest thing there was I'm very resourceful. So that's one of my other core values, is be resourceful. Where, you know, I can buy a one-way ticket to Colombia or Hong Kong and not know the language that well and tap into a community on Facebook of people that live there, expats, or go look up some good restaurants, hotels, and, you know, look up blogs and figure out what's in the city and what tips they say and what to avoid, and just kind of like become more well-equipped to do the thing I need to do. And I always say solo traveling has been the biggest lesson for me in resourcefulness. Because imagine you do just get dropped in the middle of Hong Kong and you don't speak Chinese. You don't know where you are. You don't know what's a good street or a bad street. Guess what? You go and figure it out.
Dude, that's terrifying to me. Like, I'm like, I can't even imagine getting dropped in the middle of Hong Kong and not knowing the language. Like, I'm traveling right now. I'm just in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I'm scared. Like, you know, I don't know my way around here. I don't know what, you know, what streets are good and whatnot. What's kind of like the weirdest thing you've ever seen when you were traveling, or like, do you ever have like a scary experience or anything in one of these other countries?
Yeah. So I actually have a very long history of near disasters. And people are either saying, Arnie, I'm never going to travel with you, or Arnie, I'm always going to travel with you, because they're always near disasters. They never actually hit me. So couple of examples. I was in Las Vegas during the shooting, and I was like four blocks away from when that happened. I was up in the stratosphere when all the news is hitting and town is shutting down. People are freaking out, all of that. I was in Miami the same morning as a bridge collapsed and killed a bunch of people, both on the bridge and under the bridge. I was in London in the airport about to hop on the tube, and there's a terrorist attack like 20 minutes away. And just all these repeated things that happened near me. And I'm just always grateful that I got good luck or good karma or somebody's looking out for me, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But, yeah, lots of things near me, but you know, I've never even been robbed traveling or anything. Like, I'm good to go.
Okay, yeah, that's God, man. That's because you're going around. It's kind of interesting. Like, you're kind of seeing the whole world, and there's stuff going on where you are. But that's good though. You've been able to, like, you've lived in all these places, and you've never even like kind of run into anything directly. I remember like, when I was a kid growing up, I had this friend in high school from Mexico, and his name was Edgar. He used to tell me stories about how, like, growing up in Mexico, like his dad, one time he got like carjacked, and then he went to tell the police, because there were like police nearby, and he went to the police and told them what had just happened, and they beat him up and then robbed him. and like left him for dead. It was a bad, like a really bad situation. And he was telling me that. And I'm like, oh my, like the police don't. And he was like, no, yeah, it's not real police in Mexico. It's like, they're gangsters. I was like, oh my God. He was like, yeah, what, like my family had to leave. Like his family, because that happened, they had to like leave that town because they couldn't show their face there again. It's like, but yep. You never seen anything like that going on. Like even not to you, but like, have you ever been in Mexico or been in some other country and seen some weird, like kind of shady stuff going on?
Yes. I think the biggest thing, they got a saying in Colombia, no dar papaya, which basically means don't put yourself in situations that are more likely to and bad for you. So like every now and then I might see somebody post in like an expat Facebook group and say, I got robbed last night, you know, watch out or screw this town, I'm out of here. And then in the comment section, you find out they were like drunk alone outside of a casino at 2 a.m. Like, dude, come on, have half a brain. Like that's yeah. way more likely to happen to you. Of course, it sucks that it happened. It shouldn't happen, but come on. Like,
yeah, be smart. Yeah, you got to kind of just know your surroundings and kind of be, you know, aware at all times. Yeah, I remember that. I got like kind of accosted by a prostitute in Mexico one time. Only time I was ever out of the country, but it was in Cancun. But yeah, so it's also interesting that you've got sort of the advantage of the internet community kind of helping each other out with these things. And I remember Dennis last week was saying like there's a digital entrepreneur community, digital nomads, that like when he travels, he'll just meet up with different people in different countries. Okay. Is that what you do too?
100%, especially before I had, you know, the audiences online, you know, going out to Medellin the first time, I knew one person who okay. told me to come out. Hey, it's cool. Come check it out. And then, you know, he's going to events, he's meeting people, inviting me along, and I get plugged in over here. Meet some other people on Facebook groups. Hey, what's a good restaurant? Hey, you know, what's a good co-working spot? Hey, come out. Oh, you do this? Oh, cool. Let's hang, you know? So mm-hmm. it's, and expats and travelers love to get together with other people. Cause if they're out there and they're solo, you know, they want to meet other people. So that it's really easy to tap into communities and kind of, you know, come in and out. Everybody's always on the move and you just kind of meet up and hang out.
What's expats? What does that mean?
Basically means people who it's a white people word for immigrants.
Oh, okay. All right.
Basically people, mostly people who, you know, left their country to live in another country. A lot of people who are, retired,
okay.
or people who, you know, had their life in, let's say America, but, became an expat. Now they live in, I don't know, France. Whatever.
Does it stand for like expatriate or something? Like I exactly. used to be about my country and now I'm not. Do you consider yourself an expat? Is that accurate?
Kinda. And it's not so much of like, I don't like my country anymore, but like, oh, I found that I like things over here, so I moved here. Or, okay. you know, whatever personal circumstance people have to, you know, go somewhere else.
So you don't, are you even a resident of the US anymore or no? Like you're just... Oh, okay. So you travel a certain amount of time of the year and then you're here a certain amount of time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. I have his photos pulled up here. This one you're in the Bahamas. I just grabbed a bunch of random ones. This is, he's got like he's looking out of a hotel, or is this like a condo or something?
That was fun. Yeah. That was Miami.
Oh, this is Miami. Okay. You lived in Miami for a little bit, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay. I used to live in Miami. I lived there from 2014 to 2018. Nice. Cool place. A lot of things can happen in Miami. You definitely got to keep your powder dry there. You got to be aware at all times. A lot of cocaine there in Miami. People kind of like giving it to you and stuff, but you got to be, you know, kind of careful with that. This one is in, okay, this is the Philippines, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just saw Jeff this last weekend, the guy in that picture there.
Okay. Is he someone you met in this sort of like nomad community or was this a...
I met him online through some other business stuff, but we run a lot of the same circles. I'm a client of his. He's a client of mine. We've known each other for, I don't know, 5 years, something like that.
Okay, cool. This is in Portugal. He's always got is this all selfies? Like you taking this yourself or you got... Sometimes
most
there's other...
Yeah.
Okay. This one, I'm not sure. This is not you. This is This is like a zombie picture. You didn't see this somewhere, did you?
No.
Okay.
That was a lead generation thing.
Oh, okay. My bad. This is Mexico. This is, where is this? This is with your girlfriend?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Is this, did you meet her through like travel?
Met her online actually, but then we also met up down in Mexico.
Okay, very cool. Is she from Mexico?
Venezuela.
Okay, nice. Here's you outside of a private jet in Las Vegas.
That was fun.
This is, I pulled this out because it said Coke in a bag just for tourists, but this was what, like Costa Rica? It's actually Coca-Cola, not...
for the podcast listeners.
Yeah. What is this though? I did think this looked like really like interesting. This is like how they do beverages there.
Yeah, that was Costa Rica. And because they have a really strong recycling program. So you buy the Coca-Cola and they dump it in a bag for you and give you a straw.
Okay. That's recycling. See, for all you people think you're doing recycling, that's recycling, dude. What's like the weirdest thing anyone has ever tried to give you in these countries? Because, you know, I've been like I said, the only place I was Cancun, but there were so many different things they're trying to push on you. What's kind of like the weirdest thing that they've ever tried to, any like weird drugs or anything like that? Or like,
I don't know. That's a tough one. Cause like, you know, people often are just trying to target tourists with whatever it is. Hey, tourists, cigars,
yeah.
Let's go on this boat ride. Let's go do this. And it's, you know, people out there just trying to hustle, make a living. And yeah, if whatever you look for, you'll find it basically. Yeah.
Well, they don't know you. Like, you're not even a tourist at this point. I wouldn't even classify you. That's not even possible. You're a regular now. Like, this is, you do this for a living at this point. What's kind of like your...
Because I'm fluent in Spanish and people would never guess that by looking at me, you know, red beard. But, you know, let's say I'll hop out of the airport somewhere in Mexico, let's say. And I say, hey, where are you going? And I'll tell them, hey, I'm going here. How much? You know, in Spanish. And they're like, oh, $100. And I just laugh at them. I just sit there and laugh at them. Like, no. Like, I live here. I know the prices. Like, no, not happening. So then I go back and forth. I'm surprising them with the space, speaking Spanish, knowing the prices and all that. So definitely some perks to coming back and kind of knowing how things go.
You ever get recognized in the airport?
It's happened a few times, but usually more for like events and stuff like that. Like there's a bunch of people coming out for a certain event, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
What's this picture, by the way, I have pulled up. He's with his girlfriend in front of the Eiffel Tower here. What's like your favorite place that you've ever traveled to?
I think one of my favorites is Barcelona. We just went there this summer. We were actually in Barcelona and then hopped over to Paris. But yeah, I always say that's like a place I might, you know, retire to when I get old. Just really cool culture, cool people, a lot of stuff going on.
Okay, so Spain. Yeah, you mentioned that in the beginning. You really like Spain. My brother's actually traveled to Spain. I've never been there though. So I guess this kind of brings up a point with the business though, because you've been doing it so much. Do you ever get like burned out from traveling? It just seems like, cause it's hard. Like I'm just starting to do this now and it's just in the US, just traveling while working on the business. And it's hard sometimes. Like, does that ever bother you? You ever get burned out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it can come in waves, especially if I have like a lot of things back to back. Like I remember one time that same year, 2018, when I did go to 20 countries, I went to 6 countries alone in 1 month. It was like bouncing around Europe. So everything was, you know, 3 to 7 days each. Like, oh, I want to go see Greece. Cool. Let's go to Greece. Pew. Just bing, 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 like pinball around Europe because I wanted to. It sounded awesome. So I did it. But during that time, especially in that entire year, I had to get a whole lot more intentional about my productivity, my time, my team, my systems, and say, you know, here's a challenge I always tell people. If you literally had 1 hour a day to work on your business, not a single minute more, what would you do? And during that time for me, a lot of times that was true. You know, I'm traveling, I'm on a train, I'm on a bus, I'm on a plane, I'm taking a tour, I'm trying to find my Airbnb in some weird alley. And then guess what? I finally find it and I have an hour to do some work before I'm hungry again or want to go to sleep, you know? Mm-hmm. And that forces you to really go, what's actually important right now? What mm-hmm. can I do to delegate these other things? What can I just not do? You know, what can I get off of my plate completely? And all of that, by the end of that trip, I had a way more dialed in business, better team members that were holding it down for me, less random crap flying around, you know, and it helped me out a ton.
Do you think that's hard for, like, is there a certain type of person that you have to be able to do that? Or you think there's anyone that shouldn't do this? Like the traveling part, the digital nomad.
Yeah. I say, you know, it definitely comes down to knowing yourself and what you want. Cause some people it's not for them, you know, that mm-hmm. much travel or high volume or like that kind of uncertainty of, okay, I don't know where my Airbnb is when I get to Greece. I'm gonna have to go find it. You know, I like challenges and I like adventures and I'm cool with the unknown. A lot of people aren't. It really freaks mm-hmm. them out, you know, really yeah. puts them in a bad state. And that's okay. That's cool. They don't have to do it. You know, if it interests you, cool. If not, find another way to do it. You know, maybe you go with a tour group or somebody that already has everything all set up, or maybe you just go to, you know, all-inclusive resort in Mexico or whatever it is where it's all taken care of. You don't have to figure anything out.
Okay. No, that makes sense. I feel like I'm sort of, you know, dipping my toe in, but like, I definitely want to travel at some point around the world. I feel like I'd like to have it to a point where my business doesn't need me in it as much every day, to where I can kind of like, you know, have that space a little bit and not be juggling so much. But we've talked about a lot of stuff, Arnie. What's kind of, tell me what's going on right now. I know you're doing a lot of investing. I know that you're into some new things lately. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So big thing there, you know, after building up more of the businesses with the Facebook groups and the software and all these different things, I, you know, had some money sitting around. So I wanted to get more into investing. I didn't want to just keep investing in myself, my business, more coaches, more programs, you know, to keep just growing the business. I wanted to get into other assets and other ways to make money. So I got into some real estate deals. I got into some franchises. I got into stocks and crypto and all these different things. Really just kind of dove in head first, very luckily with, you know, a few mentors and now business partners I have to mm-hmm. get in the game. And then people are saying, Arnie, dude, you know Facebook groups. How did you just buy 8 franchises? I'm like, well, that guy knows how to do franchises. So we just put our money together and gave it to him. And now he just opened up the franchises. So we all have some equity stake. And now I get checks. They're like, oh, that's cool. Can I do that? Sure, let's do it together. So we formed this investor club, basically helping people put money into deals where they don't have to run the business. They don't have to deal with the tenants. We can pull up our money and then, you know, invest in stuff together.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like that's kind of the trajectory for a lot of online entrepreneurs. Like you build your business, you build it to a certain level, you get cash flow, and then you start investing in stuff and doing all kinds of deals. But it sounds like you've always kind of been really intelligent in that regard. Like you know, we're getting in on that software deal at one point. You've always kind of had your tentacles out there in different kinds of things at the same time, yep. Right? What's sort of the future for you, do you think?
Yeah, so I think a big part of that too is, you know, continuing to grow the club. And, you know, we do a lot of events, we do a lot of deals together and that kind of stuff. But I think the bigger it goes, you know, the bigger deals we can do, the more people we can bring into these deals, the more different ways we can help people in getting their money right, learning how to do the investments on their own, all this stuff. So as that happens, I'm also seeing so many different deals. Like we get pitched all the time, and we also have a lot of investors that work with us. So I can kind of see like, oh, well, this person's selling a software, or they want to raise money for their software and they want to pitch our group. That's pretty cool. Huh? Maybe we can take a little equity piece and help them, you know, with the raise, or maybe I can just buy into some of it myself or buy the company with the investor group and have that. So that's really where the empire building comes in. Like you said, the tentacles and a few things.
Right.
So, you know, having ownership now in a couple of companies I actively run, couple of companies that are more passive. So the more that kind of gets built out, that's truly how people are able to, you know, multiply their net worth and have different things going on, different exits, different cash flow, just kind of keeping the machine moving. So I think doing that on a much bigger scale.
Okay. Yeah. You've always had a really strong personal brand. Like your face is out there. Your name is out there. You're kind of, and you've been really consistent with it. At least it seemed like where you're kind of always everywhere. Like I even get voicemails from you sometimes. Like that's like one of your, how do you do that, by the way? How do you kind of be everywhere? Is that something that you've always been really good at, having all these different marketing channels, or did you have to kind of go one at a time and like build on each other?
Yeah, some of them were one at a time. Some of them are kind of together, like, you know, a Facebook group and an email list. They grow at the same time. But the best ways to do it is to have a team that's going to help you distribute the content. Because like, I'm really good at Facebook. I can write posts all day. I can sit down and write posts for 5 groups in 10 minutes. Done, you know? But like, I'm inconsistent with email marketing, you know? I have my automations, it's up there, but I have to be more consistent there. So I just hired a writer. I want to get more back on the paid ads. So I brought back on my content guy to run YouTube. I hired another guy to do Facebook ads. It really takes a machine of people and specialists to be more everywhere.
Okay. What do you think about the Facebook group kind of, because it's evolved quite a bit, right? And I guess there's a lot of, I don't know, there's definitely a perception out there that the Facebook group thing isn't as strong as it used to be, or that it's, you know, the engagement's definitely not what it used to be, right? What's your opinion on kind of the future of that? Like, could someone do what you did at this point? Can someone still grow a group to 70, 80,000 members? And is it worth it to even do that now? Or what's your take on that?
I'd say absolutely. The biggest difference between then and now is how important the niching is. Like we said earlier, like millennial entrepreneurs, pretty broad. I would not start that group over again today. I remember at one point, somebody posted in the group saying something like, "Hey, I'm trying to export coffee beans out of Brazil." And I was like, I can't help with that. 99.99% of the group can't help with that. Like, but it's still kind of relevant. Millennial entrepreneurs, hey, you got a connection. So it's completely irrelevant. You know, it's wasting newsfeed for people, and it's not going to help them. They're not going to engage. So I was like, I need to start a new group. I need to get a more niche group that's going to be a lot more focused on the topics. The name of the game now is niching, because if you don't do that, they're not going to know, you know, to come to your group and ask questions, or to come to you as the expert. Because I can't say I'm an entrepreneur expert. What the hell does that mean? You know, nobody's going to want anything to do with me. But, you know, if we say, hey, you know, we are helping people invest passively into franchises and real estate and businesses. Oh, that sounds cool. I want to be a part of that. Or you don't, you know? Okay. So better niching really helps.
What's your main Facebook group now?
Yeah. So we still have the Millennial Entrepreneur. We have another one called Community and Conversions. And that was more like coach, course creator specific. That was the first one I started after I was like, yeah, Millennial Entrepreneur, way too broad. And then we also have one for the investing as well.
Okay. So the big difference between now versus when you started, you know, several years ago is the niching. Like you can't be as successful with a really broad community anymore.
Yep. A lot tougher.
But you're still teaching people to this day how to build a niche Facebook group, right? And how to grow an audience that they can monetize.
Exactly. Yeah, the cool thing is a lot of the ways to do it haven't changed all that much. You know, there's fancy new buttons and Facebook doing this and everyone tag and all kinds of things, but the foundations are not that different.
Yeah, you were really the person to, at least that I've ever seen, to like bring it to the forefront like that. And you were kind of a pioneer in that sense of like teaching Facebook groups. Do you still see yourself that way? Is that kind of still your claim to fame?
I think it's definitely part of it. But once people kind of get past that brand part of, oh, I already can help Facebook groups, then I'm like, okay, well, you need to set up this whole marketing system. Oh, you need to set this up. Oh, here's how you fix your copy. Here's how you fix your offer. Here's how to do a campaign. So Facebook group is like the top level brand. Oh yeah, I need help with this. But really, you need help with all that other shit, you know, that's going to make your Facebook work to make money, which is what they really want.
So are you more about sort of the internet marketing side of it then, or would that be an accurate description?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, more of the kind of general marketing ecosystem, the copywriting, the offers, you know, with the group as one of those tools to make it work a lot faster.
Okay. And there's a lot of people teaching Facebook groups now, and there's like copycats out there and stuff. Do you ever like, what's your opinion on that? Do you ever look into that? And do you ever feel like, you know, I was the first, but I don't know. Do you have any opinion on some of the newer ones out there? You don't have to name names or anything.
I say it's good for the industry. Also, a lot of them are some of my best affiliates for the software. Okay. Like we may see similar stuff on groups, but they don't have software, most of them. So I'm down with that. There's plenty of people that came to me, learned my methods, you know, love my software, went on to teach some of those things to their clients. Cool. As long as they're not like copy and paste, rip me off, or say they just the next best thing. And then they copy and paste my lead magnet from 5 years ago and say it's new. Like, come on, you know? So I've seen that, but yeah, I think it's better for the industry because then they're out there telling people to start groups. And now more people are starting groups. More people are needing my software, and you know, a lot of them don't last anyways. So.
For sure. You know, my listeners, people want to find out more about you. Where should they go?
Yes, I'd say main spot, if you're curious about the Facebook groups, check out joingroupmasters.com. So that's where we have all of our training on start, grow, monetize a group, live support calls. We drop a new marketing campaign and copy template every single month. Like if you're listening to this right now, the Black Friday template just dropped. So that's going to go make a bunch of people some money. I know it's going to work for me. So check that out, joingroupmasters.com. And the software as well as group funnels. I think you got a affiliate link for that hiding around here somewhere in the description or below this video, wherever you're listening.
For sure. All right, cool. Yeah. Joingroupmasters.com and groupfunnels.com is the software that helps you grow your email list with Facebook groups. We're going to link to both of those things in the description. And as well as if you want to learn more about Arnie, you can check him out on Facebook. They can follow you on Facebook, right?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's probably the best spot I kind of see generally, because you know, I got a bunch of groups, got a bunch of different email lists and stuff going on. So connect, say what's up. Let me know what you liked of this show. If anything stood out, I'm happy to hear from you.
Awesome. Arnie, thank you so much for coming on and kind of giving us the time. And you've just got like a really fascinating journey, man. I've always really enjoyed following your journey. So
thank you.
You know, can't wait to continue to do that. And we'll have to do this again sometime in person, man.
No doubt. It'll be fun. We got to get you traveling more though.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting out there little by little. After Scottsdale, it's going to be like, I don't know, like Albuquerque or something. We'll see. But all right, man, thank you so much. And hope to see you again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.